You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio. Welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week, I'm super fortunate to be able to share the stories, the knowledge and the expertise of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is a really, really exciting one. So today we're going to be talking about building connection at work, which is a topic which is, yeah, really fascinating one. And to do that, we're joined by three local experts. We're joined by Helen Joy of People Spark, Alan Smith of Your Business Mindset, and Alex Dean of The Bista Collection, and also three great networkers. I'm sure that you'll get a chance to meet them at some point if you haven't already. This is The Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming our three experts after this. Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in today, we're going to be talking all about building connection at work. And to do that, we're joined by three great local experts. So let's start by introducing them, if that's okay. Alex, I'm going to start with you, if that's okay. For those who haven't met you, introduce yourself and indeed your organisation.
Hi everyone. I'm Alex from the Bista Collection. I'm the brand recruitment manager for Bista Village. So I look after all things people with our brand partners here, all 165 of them, everything from attraction, retention, talent pooling. All things people.
Amazing. And next up, Alan. For those who don't know you, introduce yourself and lead your business.
Hi, thanks, Ben. Yeah, Alan Smith from Your Business Mindset. And I work with business people who want to change as a coach or a consultant, sometimes for specific changes, sometimes more general.
Amazing. And last but certainly not least, Helen.
Yep. So I'm Helen Joy and I run People Spark. So I work with businesses in Oxfordshire and beyond to help their managers build connections with their teams, because when you don't have that, everything is so much harder.
Isn't it just? The three of you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. The hardest part, because we all know about business, don't we? But songs are sometimes a little bit harder. So, Alan, I'm going to pick on you first, if that's okay. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Okay, song choice is Because the Night, Patti Smith. First concerts I went to at university. You won't remember the Stiff Tours, but I do very fondly.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're joined by three great local businesses. Alex Dean of the Bista Collection, Alan Smith of Your Business Mindset, and Helen Joy of People Spark. And together we're going to be talking about building connection at work. Helen, I'm going to start with you if that's okay. Quite a big question really. What do we mean by building connection at work?
That's a very good question. The importance, I think, of connection. So what is connection? I suppose it's that's the first question, is what do we mean by connection? So for me personally, it is when you know somebody, or you sense somebody, understand what it is that makes them thrive in a work environment, where you understand what makes them tick, where you understand how to get the best for them and from them as a manager. And I think on a human level, connection is very much about seeing other people, actually just seeing them and seeing them for who they are, whether that be for, you know, a short period of time or building deeper and deeper connections. And you can have that at work just as much as you can out of work, I think.
No, absolutely. And Alex, in terms of building a team, because of course you've worked with some very big teams, How do you build a great team? You know, do you look at things like personality profiling? Do you base it on who you think is going to get on? Or are there other things to consider? I'd be really interested in seeing your thoughts there.
Yeah, there's There's a number of tools you can use from profiling. Personal favorite would be something like a Berkman, which gives you the stresses, the needs, the usual behaviors of an individual. But the key to it, from my experience and personally what I believe in, is teams don't work if you're all the same. It's building complementary skill sets. It's everybody is the same, thinking the same way. Not only do you lack possibly a little bit of innovation, creativity, new ideas, but you're going to get clashes because everybody's trying to do the same thing at the same time. You need that diversity within a team. It sounds obvious, but I've seen some teams fall apart because you get that I want to employ another version of me from a hiring manager. Well, you don't. You want someone that complements you.
Really, really interesting insight there. And Alan, in terms of that leadership piece, how should leaders think about how they, I guess, set the tone and how they're thinking about the connections that they're building within the team beneath them? And I guess on Alex's point there, in terms of when they're recruiting, ensuring that they're building complements as opposed to other versions of them. Quite a big question, sorry.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that, Ben. I think to build on what Alex was saying, you want people that are different, that are different skills. But I think the most effective leaders I've seen, they connect on a values level. So, and I've seen that with people who perform, connect with the business with the top three values. You know, if your values are, I don't know, open, honest, and fair, you're never going to gel with a secretive organization or a secretive leader. And that's some of the work we do to try and unpack that. And it's not what businesses say because they're great at writing stuff like management gurus. It's the values in action.
No, really interesting. And Helen, I know that you've done quite a lot of work with your clients on that values piece. How do you go about understanding what an individual's values are and also the values of the business at that very early stage? How do you go through that process?
I think in terms of from a business point of view, it's about spending the time actually understanding what really happens in a business. As Anne said, not about necessarily what they've got written on the wall or what they say happens, but understanding what their purpose is, what they're there for, what actual behaviours they set their store by. And looking at how, as again back to Alan, you know, what those behaviors in action look like. So those values look like in terms of behaviors. So how do people behave and what underpins those values? And then I think as individuals, it's a really simple exercise. It's just sitting down and getting people to think about what are the most important things for you from a personal point of view. And then looking at how that maps onto to what's there in the workplace. But the biggest and easiest way to do it is sit there as a manager and ask the question of people. And that's what we managers don't do sometimes is they make assumptions about what people's values are. Sometimes because of the behaviours they see, but sometimes because they reflect their own values onto their team rather than actually understanding the individual.
And it's just coming across with your recruitment hat on. How important is it to think about that those values as part of a recruitment process? And at what point should it be involved?
I think from day dot, it needs to be involved. So right from the very beginning, during the process, they bold statement here, but the worst part of a process is a structured interview. If you sit here and you ask somebody specific questions, you ask them the scenario based things, etc., you're going to get the answers they want you to hear. And those values are probably going to be slightly out of line. They're probably not going to match with what that individual really thinks. Having a conversation, that open conversation, as a hiring manager, you get far more from the individual. You'll identify those values. You'll see more of that individual's true colors, and whether it gels with the team and the dynamic you're looking to build. To give you to relate it back to Bicester Village, we've got 160 odd different boutiques, 160 odd different teams. And the dynamic and the conversations in those interviews and those questions, does it fit with where that individual wants to be? And also, do they have an actual interest or a passion in what they're trying to do? Because irrelevant of what you say, do, it's going to be pretty short-lived if you're not interested in what you're applying for as a role. You have to have a genuine interest and passion in that area to be successful as well as matching with the values.
No, totally. I think the well-known phrase, which is a bit of a prehistoric one, that if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, is really apt here, isn't it? It really, really is.
I
Alan,
think if it's if you love what you do, but also you love how you do it, I think that's the important thing. You can get connected to the mission, but not the way of doing it. And if I can just pick up on equipment on what Alex was saying, we've done a project up in Manchester not that long ago with one of the big accountancy firms who were losing a lot of students, a lot of graduates come Christmas. So we did some work with them, and they had a bit like Helen was saying, a lovely mission statement on the wall about empowerment and all this good stuff. And I was in the bar one evening with one of the partners. I said, "So what are your real values around here?" And he said, "Arrogant and proud." He said, "We think we're the best, we're the most expensive." I said, "Well, tell the graduates that then. Then you'll recruit the right ones. It's not for me to judge your mission statement, your values, but you're conning people, and that was very expensive." So it's just been, it doesn't matter so much what the values are, you've just got to be up front, I think.
No, totally. And actually, that's a sign of a really good recruitment process, is that actually, if you can look back and the person you've employed can look back and say, this job and this culture and this organization is exactly what I expected, you've done a good job. What's your take on the onboarding piece, Helen? Is because I think that we all know that you can't make a first impression what twice, and we all know that actually really good onboarding and really good training, which I know is your specialist area, is going to give those foundations for to do a good job, whether that be the skills, and having that knowledge, or whether that be actually making a connection at work and making friends at work. There's huge data, isn't there, to say if you've got friends at work, your longevity is going to be considerably longer as an average. So unpack that brain dump for me, if that's okay, in a much better way than I conversed it.
I think the first point is that recognizing that the onboarding starts from the advert for the job is that, you know, that whole process is everything has got to be seamless all the way through in order for that person, exactly as Alan said there, if you when you start, it should there shouldn't be any surprises. You should be coming into exactly what you expected. And then it's about preparing and planning for that. And the amount of businesses that just wait till someone turns up on the day and then sort of sit there going, "Oh, right, yes, you're here. Right, yes, okay." You know, that onboarding process should be agreed and set down before the interview process starts. It should be that absolutely everything just flows seamlessly. So when that person is offered the job and they accept, they get something that says, "Welcome to the company. This is what's going to happen. This will be your first week. These are the people that you're going to meet. This is when you're going to do it. This is when you, if it's a remote hybrid job, this is when you're coming into the office." All of those things have got to be thought out. And it's then balancing, especially when you're recruiting more senior people, balancing that training and that hand holding against when you start to let go and let them do the job that you've employed them to do. Because again, senior people come in and they end up being kind of minded for too long and then thinking, "Hang on a minute, where's my autonomy? I was recruited to do this job. Let me get on and do that." But it's for me, that's it starts right back there.
Interesting. Well, what's your take on this, Alex?
I totally agree with everything that Helen's saying. I think the other piece from a profile and understanding during the recruitment process. So using something like the Burcombe tool, which I touched on very briefly earlier, if you know someone's usual behaviours, you know how they're likely to act and perform, which is a tool that's proven to be accurate. The and you understand their needs, so you go through that profile until you understand what you need to give them across the nine competencies within it. You're not going to see the stress behaviours, but equally, as you onboard somebody, it is a stressful and challenging time. But being able to identify those stress behaviours that a tool like that will highlight for you, for example, if you don't communicate in a way that they need the, and what they're expecting from their employer, the stress behavior you're likely to see is X. And therefore, you can identify that because you can look back through the report, you can look at the stress behaviors, and you can adapt and change that. You've got a chance of success and you've got a chance of rectifying any challenges. But if you don't set out that onboarding process and be willing to adapt to that individual, you're setting them up to fail almost. It's not a one-way street. It has to come from the employer and the employee from day one.
No, totally agree. Totally agree. Alex, I'm going to stay with you. As with the high bar that's already been set, you have chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
My song is High by the Lighthouse Family. I had it on repeat growing up at home, but it also just brings back some positive memories and tells people it'll be okay.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch. Following that, another great song chosen by Alex. Helen, I hope you're feeling the pressure. We've heard from our three experts, Helen of PeopleSmart, Spark, Alan of Your Business Mindset, and Alex of the Business Bista Collection. I can't say all my words today. And we're talking about building connection at work, which is a really, really important topic. Alan, I'm really keen to come across to the small business owner, if that's okay, because I think that if we look at who listens to this show, the active listener is the Oxfordshire business owner. So, if we look at that piece around how does the business owner build connections with the team and kind of that vulnerability and how much information do you share? I think you could give some really good insight there, for some things for us to consider.
I think one of the big things with business owners is learning how to listen. I'm doing a round of interviews, in fact, this afternoon. There's a new DG, new Director General being appointed, and asking the team, what do they need? What do they need from that person? So, and then acting on it. I mean, people need all sorts of things. So if you can create a culture of rapport and ask people what they want, they'll tell you what they need and not guess. And I think with business owners it's the same. It's the same as when you connect with other business owners, because that's quite a big thing. That's the difference with small business owners, I think, and large corporates. The small business owners need a network, a peer group, and part of that is listening, meeting other people's needs. And without wishing to sound like Ted Lasso, being curious and not judgmental. We can easily judge. I can guarantee that if you judge what I want, you'll be wrong. I can't say what it, you know, what, I can't predict what you'll want, but it's very difficult to judge to do that. So yeah, just ask people and listen, and then act on what they say.
No, totally, totally. And Helen, I'm really keen to understand, talking about kind of maybe some bigger organizations, and I think Alex and Alan will of course have insight. I think that we all look at the stereotypical marketing's against sales or whatever else. I think that's a common analogy, isn't it, in the world of people. But how do you, if you're part of a larger organization that have their own silos within the organization, how do you go about building connections across organizations and really getting the individual parts to talk to each other and engage with each other? Maybe if they've got their own focuses.
There's two kind of key ways that you can help to integrate different functions and different departments. And one is sort of mentoring or mastermind type scenarios where you sort of do those internally. So as Alan said there about small business owners needing their peer group to work, that works just the same internally as well. And it's making sure that you've got reasons for to bring those different functions together. And a lot of businesses do that through mentoring, or alternatively, I've developed some internal masterminds for kind of heads of functions. So you've got someone from marketing, someone from sales, someone from finance, someone from HR, all the different functions coming together to look at the kind of strategic view of things and how that impacts. So just in the same way you'd get an exec or an SLT together, they bring these teams together. Not quite as often, maybe every other month, but give them reasons to be together and to do those things. And the other side is when you then do have training interventions, whether they be on new systems, new processes, new customer facing things, just bringing people together from different departments that are maybe on the sort of more junior levels, because and helping them understand where they all fit together. Because when you understand the part you play and the impact that you not doing has on other people further down the line or either end, it gives people that sense of connection to the bigger organization, gives them a sense of connection to their colleagues and to their peers. And once you've got that, you can really build on that as an organization. And again, it's tying it back into the mission and the purpose. As long as everybody, or as long as that mission and purpose has been driven from the right place and the right reasons, you've got people on board who are bought into that. But even if not, you can do that on a smaller level. But it's just about bringing people together, whatever method you use for that.
Really, really interesting. And Alex, I think Bicester Village is a really good example of that, isn't it? In terms of it's a globally renowned shopping centre, but there's lots of brands and lots of functions that bring that together. What's your take in terms of your experience of working at such a great place?
Yeah, there's a vast array of talent here. This is an opportunity here for to come and build a career. There's people here that start on shop floor and go all the way through to be global retail directors, and I know individuals have done that. The dynamics, the teams, everything is slightly different. Every brand has a different nuance. There's something unique about every single opportunity here. The as a result, the finding the right place for you is key, but which is why we do what we can to support our brands and encourage them to reach out and go through processes, use profiling, do everything they can. But we also deal with brands that we're working with them across multiple villages across Europe, but and under the same contacts. So we're building an understanding with them that works everywhere. And we get to hopefully have some kind of impact on developing and delivering some great careers for people as a result.
No, really, really fascinating. Really fascinating. And Alan, in terms of and we did touch on it before, so apologies to go back here. But what I think I'm really kind of keen to build on here really is I guess the transparency, if that's okay, because I think that if we read business books or listen to podcasts or speak to business leaders, I think there's a lot of very different views in terms of how transparent are you with the team. If you're struggling as an organization, do you tell the team straight away that there might be redundancies in the future until there will be redundancies? Do you say I'm really stressed or do you say I'm thinking about selling the business? Like, how transparent should you be within an organization? And I appreciate there isn't necessarily a one size fits all, but how do you decide the information you share with your people?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think the way I'd answer it is you need to be authentic, so you need to be true to you and decide. There isn't one size fits all. For me, it's more transparency the better. But one of the things that I often encourage certainly very senior people to do is read the management books by all means, that's fine, and also trust your gut. Trust your intuition because you know your team, you know your business, and I think that's incredibly underrated. Certainly in large organizations, they try and make it a, I don't know, a sort of physics exam where there's one answer. There isn't in business, I don't think. You have to trust that. Certainly, I mean, you'll know this in recruitment. When I've recruited people who my gut says isn't right, it's been a nightmare. So I think that's important. I don't know if that's answered your question, Ben, but as transparent as you can for me. They know anyway. The thing about redundancy, if you said, if you're thinking about redundancy, guarantee your team know about it anyhow.
No, totally. Totally. Helen, there's been a high bar so far. Very high bar indeed. As with Alex and Alan, you have chosen the song for our listeners. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
I was going to try and be clever, but I decided I'd actually go with a song that I really love. And mine is Put Your Records On by Corinne Bailey Rae, because it reminds me of sitting on a rooftop bar in New York when my husband and I got engaged.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about building connection at work. And do definitely head over to the Get Radio website or your podcast provider so you can listen back, because our three guests have shared some such interesting insight, which I'm sure will be useful for you all. Helen, I'm keen to talk about out of work stuff, if that's okay, technical term for it, because I think that we all know that the person that comes into work is only part of the total human that you know. And we all know that by having friends at work and by having those connections outside work, that you're going to improve happiness. Of course you are. What are some of the things you've seen within your clients or previous employers that have worked really well in terms of encouraging friendships and encouraging that, I guess, kind of deeper connection outside the four walls of work?
It's one of those things, isn't it, where you can't force connection. You can't force people to build those relationships. All you can do is provide the opportunities for them to build them for themselves. And when I worked in recruitment back a long time ago, it was always any opportunity to celebrate, any opportunity to celebrate a win and to go out after work. A couple of drinks, whether that be, you know, the people drinking the lemonade or the people drinking the beer, you know, whatever. It was about but I think that it wasn't about the where you went, it was about the celebration. It was about recognizing, specifically when people have worked really well together, when you've had a collaboration, because the things that you celebrate and reward are the things that people want to do more of. And people do that again and again. So if you help people have those opportunities to work more closely together, and sometimes under a bit of pressure, actually, that's when you see the real person. That's when you see what people are really good at and what people aren't so good at. And when you get people recognizing, I want to work with that person because they're great at that. They might not be good at that, but I can do that bit. That's when you really start to see them working, when they can identify each other's strengths and weaknesses, but their weaknesses aren't there to be weaponized or judged. They're there because they're just seeing them as the person. And when you get to that level of knowledge of people, I think that's when you get the genuine connections, and that's when you get the trust and people developing relationships that go beyond we just work together.
No, totally. And Alex, I imagine working within such a large organization, there's a lot of diversity. How can you factor diversity into this and ensure that actually you're encouraging really inclusive working environments and great places where everybody, you know, feels really involved?
Collaboration is the short answer. There's working together, building those relationships. They take time. Encouraging diversity is something we all want, we all strive for, and everybody has a policy in place. And how they're going to do it. But actually having a diverse culture and a diverse work environment is how you build success. We have, for example, here, we work in different ways. We have different areas of the business. We have different opportunities to get involved in different things. We're encouraged to work in project teams on different projects where our skill sets can be added. And we work with our brands in the same way. We bring them in and get them involved in things so that we can deliver the best version, but an inclusive version and a diverse mindset and skill set that encourages and includes everybody, which is where you then end up with the relationships, you end up with success. And we're all striving for success. Nobody's going to work because they want to. Well, majority of people aren't going to work because they want to. We've all got to go and do something to earn some money because we've all got bills to pay. And we work with everybody to make sure they enjoy it, and it's the best version of themselves, but the best possible outcome, so everybody sees some of that success.
No, totally. Alan, I'm going to talk about mergers and acquisitions, if that's okay. So I think that that's always it takes you back to primary school, doesn't it, when two classes go together. But in the world of work, what does that process look like? How do you focus on the building the connections there, and what's I guess the groundwork you can do to give really kind of good opportunities? I'm sure Alex and Helen will have some thoughts there as well.
Quite back to primary school. I don't know if you've done your research, but my thesis for my MBA was on mergers and acquisitions. So the depressing thing is over 80% of them don't realize stakeholder value. They don't work because they're not managed properly. It's a bit like at an individual level, you have to find some common ground. I mean, one of the things that was really interesting is if you merge two organizations and you move a building, that works much better than if you merge one of the organizations into one of the other buildings. So that was quite interesting, I thought. But you have to do a lot to make a merger or an acquisition work. You have to do an awful lot of work. It's not very straightforward. And the values, as I said before, have to match. The IT system has to integrate. So yeah, you need a merger and acquisitions team.
And from a people perspective, and maybe a question, I'll start with you, Alex, if that's okay. But from a people perspective, how do you bring those people together? Is it about putting a line in the middle and both getting to that line, or do we bring one line to the other? I'm quite intrigued on your take on this.
So from the luxury retail and the retail industry where I live and breathe and spend all my time now, we see acquisitions more than mergers regularly. You get fashion houses buying brands constantly. From a people perspective, the key is that, and the success of it working is those people have an identity. Those brands still have an identity. They have maintaining that, and having the people in those brands maintain and that identity and remain with that brand is what you have to do to make it a success. If you go and buy a brand, change the whole team, forget about what it was, you're not actually buying that brand. You're buying a name and changing it. And we see that happen and sometimes, but it's keeping those people and bringing them on the journey. And to a lot of it is reassurance that things will be okay and that the brand is going to continue is key. Obviously, these for the brands here and the doors here, the brand's decisions on acquisitions and mergers are happening hundreds, if not sometimes thousands of miles away. So it's ensuring they're comfortable and that they remain part of that brand journey, and they maintain a level of confidence in that brand and are able to show the passion that they have when they worked for it in the previous form.
No, really, really fascinating. And what was your take on this, Helen?
I've been working in businesses at times where I've seen a really, really positive merger and a really horrific acquisition. And the difference between the two was so stark because the merger that worked, as Alan said, the values are very, very similar. And they'd planned it so well and they communicated so well to the people all the way along from the very, very beginning. The acquisition, they'd bought this organization because they loved its culture and it was fantastic. It was an incredibly lean organization. It was very successful. And then they came in and destroyed everything that they bought it for. And watching, because I was doing a couple of management programs with them at the time, and watching the people that I'd worked with for a couple of years just shrivel almost because this environment around them had changed. And it's exactly as Alex said, effectively they bought the name and they ended up with just the name because the amount of people that left. And but this merger where they'd communicated openly and honestly, and they talked about the jobs that might be lost, and they talked about how you weren't applying for your own job, you were applying for a different job for this new organization. And they positioned it really, really nicely. And supported the people that weren't successful really, really well. And I think that the difference was they put the people in both organizations at the forefront of the whole process. Whereas with the acquisition, the people that required were the were a kind of necessity that they weren't bothered about. And I think that is the big difference. And I think where we're in a part of the world, a part of the world, part of the kind of economic cycle now, where there's lots and lots and lots of mergers and lots of acquisitions, it is quite frightening to see how dehumanizing some of those processes are now, which I think is quite sad.
No, absolutely, absolutely. We are coming to the final stint of the show. But one of the things that I love to leave our listeners with is like a lasting tip, something to remember. And it could be something I've just not asked you about, and apologies if so, I'm sure there's lots I haven't. Or it could be something that actually a great point you've already made that you would love them to highlight in their notepad. I'm going to start with you, Alan, if that's okay. What is your lasting top tip that you'd love to leave the listeners with?
Okey-doke. I think from an early age we've been taught a golden rule to treat others as you would like to be treated. I think that's nonsense. Treat others as they want to be treated. So you're picking up on some of the things that Alex and Helen have said. You know, you listen to people and you connect with them and find out how they want to be treated.
No, great tip. Alex.
Totally agree with what Alan said first and foremost, but top tip from me would be communicate, listen, and talk. Don't be structured. Go outside the box, have those conversations, people by people. And for the success of your organization or your business, getting the right people into it is key. And the only way you do that is getting to know them.
No, really good tip. And last but not least, Helen.
And it's funny that my three top tips, those are the two that I would normally use as well. but my other one is always, make sure that you put aside half an hour a week or a fortnight to speak to every single person in your team, not about projects, tasks, strategy, all that stuff. Just even if it's 20 minutes, half an hour, just to find out how each member of your team is doing. Just them as a human, not them as an employee, not them as a performance thing, but just how are you doing? What do you need? And then listen to their answer.
Amazing, amazing, great advice. And I'm going to leave you with one actually, but a little bit of a different one. Follow these three great people. They're all on LinkedIn, they're all really active, and they all work for some great organizations. So I'm sure you'll be able to learn something over a period of time. But thank you so much to our three experts for joining us today. And sorry, it's the end of the show. I could have definitely done double the time. But just a reminder, we've had Helen Joy of PeopleSpark, Alan Smith of Your Business Mindset, and Alex Dean of the Bista Collection. In terms of next week, we will be back with some brand new guests talking about a really interesting topic, actually. We're going to be talking about the future of print, and we're going to be talking about some of the great things that the likes of Innocent Smoothie are doing, and then so on and so forth. And to do that, we're joined by Karina Jones of Badger Design and Clive Taylor of Whitney Letterbox Magazine. So it's going to be a really interesting show. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. If you prefer podcasts, look out for the podcast version, which is released on the Monday morning on every major podcast platform. Or if you would like to see my lovely guests, do head over to the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.